You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Our paradigm shifter is a woman who has been pushing the envelope of a lot of things in life, from being an intuitive to being quite the artist. I'm looking at a beautiful picture of a rose or a beautiful flower that you painted, and a wonderful, wonderful book, and maybe even more, but we'll find that out after I introduce you to Carol Olivia Adams, soon to be the host of her own radio show. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you so much, Veronica. Thank you for having me.
It's really going to be fun for us to talk, because we have a lot in common, being intuitives and doing writing and all that. This book called The Awakening of Friendship is kind it's an unusual approach. You've got nine different ways of kind of nine different levels of entering friendship. And I know this is kind of culminating from a lot of your personal work with people and your spiritual work, isn't it?
Yes, definitely, very much so. I learned a lot from my clients, as hopefully they learned from me. And I realized certain ingredients or principles, I call them human principles as well, were very important for them to totally open up to me. Prior to that, a few years ago, I had seen the movie The Soloist, and that was also a stimuli for me to think. And The Soloist was about it's a true story, based on from an LA reporter, and Jamie Foxx and Robert Downey Jr. in it. And it's based on a musician, a street musician. And the relationship that was created between him and Robert Downey Jr. And one episode stood out is that when Robert Downey Jr. brought Jamie Foxx to a clinic, the health practitioner told him, Robert Downey Jr., that, you know, we've seen this before. We've labeled and put more labels and labels and labels. But the one thing that seems to stand out on how to be the most helpful to somebody with the so-called labels is a good friend. And that linked me with, of course, the healing process of friendship as well.
It really is, and isn't it? It's kind of shocking how much our friends push us through amazing times, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think each friend comes into our life at the time that is needed, and then some leave when we finish that certain process of our life, and then another door opens up. So the awakening of friendship is as nine human principles.
Okay.
And the first one is the wisdom of patience. And the second is presence of listening. The third is compassion. The fourth is inner security, inner peace. The fifth is courage. The sixth is power of faith. The seventh is gift of generosity. The eighth is gratitude. And the ninth is essence of love.
That's really interesting, because when you're going through the list, I'm going, boy, listening is one of the most powerful things in the whole world. When we're silent, we don't think it is, but boy, oh boy, isn't it powerful?
Yes, very, very powerful. In fact, Veronica, I have a quote in the chapter of listening that says the most basic and powerful way to connect to another person is to listen. Perhaps the most important thing to give to each other is our attention.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true. If somebody really hears you, you feel it, don't you?
Yes. I think it's it could even help strengthen our inner security. Reading a passage from the chapter, it says, we realize that we have a loyal and kind friend who nurtures our heart like the opening petals of a blossoming flower. It can help certainly us to release some of our past wounds and heal them. And hopefully we come to our own self-identity, you know.
Which one is that? Patience? I'm flipping through the book for a number of reasons right now.
Listening, page 13.
Okay.
It starts, you know, a listening friend.
Oh, great, yes.
He becomes our angel in disguise and nurtures our soul as the rivers nurture the sacred land. Not too many people, I mean, it's a wonderful, as you're saying, it's a wonderful human principle. And I'm sure some of your listeners have encountered more like monologues with people rather than dialogue.
Oh, that's for sure, yep. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's really frustrating, too. If you're really going through something and the person you're with just talks, mm-hmm. it's very painful. I have found it so painful.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Because maybe you're there and at that moment you would like to share some of your experiences of life, a certain moment that is important to you to share. Mm-hmm. And then it can become very frustrating. Is that person is just not listening to you.
It's a kind of abandonment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting. Well, who are you, Carol? What is your spiritual journey? I know by reading this book and feeling the light in it, even through all the 9 points, that you have a spiritual journey that is represented by this very non-personally stated. It's a very philosophical book with a lot of heart, but it doesn't say much about you, does it?
Well,
except that that's who you are. Yeah.
Right. And the bio is at the very, very end with some of the spirituality endeavors I've encountered. Of course, writing. I still am an intuitive counselor. I used to do it much more. I would connect to somebody with their total birthday. Mm-hmm. I had used actually the tarot cards as a story. I don't look at it in the typical way. I think we all have a story, mm-hmm. many stories. Mm-hmm. And I would just see how the symbols, synchronicity, you know, work together. I used to do, I still do actually, automatic handwriting. And that's when I would feel almost like a tightening in my right arm, and then messages would come out on paper.
Hmm.
I would write the messages, and sometimes they're from a spirit. They are from a spirit. I used to see auras when I used to go to Art Students League of New York City, and which is an interesting process because I'm just sitting there drawing live models, and somehow you can feel a color around that figure. And then I would paint that color with chalk pastels.
Oh, you mean you were studying art, were you?
I wasn't studying art history, but it was more drawing classes.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
And Art Students League is on 57th Street in Manhattan. It's a beautiful school. And one of their classes is actually, you don't have an instructor there. You do what you want. You bring any art tools that you want.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. Is that productive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
It's freedom. Then I would see auras, and I used to have an antique, so I used to channel Native American. So I guess I've encompassed the different areas
mm-hmm.
of touching into signs
mm-hmm.
or certainly synchronistic messages. I mm-hmm. think that's one of the key values that I cherish, synchronistic messages.
And the more synchronicities we have in our life, the more it says you're on your path, right?
Yes. I know Carl Jung was one of the pioneers of the word. And he used it with his, his patients in mm-hmm. psychiatry. And he believed in that thoroughly, as well as pointing out the synchronicity, or just the pattern of the universe.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, such as the pattern of the signs that we, embrace as we go on in life.
Well, were you, as a child, were you very clairvoyant and that sort of thing?
I would say I wasn't aware of it, but I started to draw on my own. I never really had instruction. And I didn't really, maybe a few things, but nothing, I would say, outstanding. I think it surfaced, so to speak, when I had a consignment antique store in the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I would receive a lot of messages.
Oh, wow.
A lot. And I have about 200 typewritten pages. Two women would come there. I would sleep actually in the store. And they would, I would lie down on the floor so it doesn't get too tight in the stomach area, the solar plexus. And then they would come back the next day with the typewritten messages.
Wow. Now, what about your folks? Were they into this as well? I mean, did you get this gift from your family? Your lineage, so to speak?
No. I think just my own thoughts of that is when each of us has a certain soul journey or mission or calling, and I don't think it has to do with the genetics of the family. It has to do more with how we were simply created, yes, through the family, the blood ties. But I think they were maybe, I never thought of that, but maybe messengers in a way from the creator that, how we manifested who we are.
Very often the one who's the intuitive or the healer or whatever is very unusual in the family, as if they're there to disrupt the family fabric is how I see it, right?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I didn't have that because my parents died when I was young.
Oh, my.
So
that was hard.
I didn't have much of an interaction in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have one sibling, my brother, but that's also created maybe more my own independence or my own self-identity. I think a lot of times you'll notice with people who've had some type of emotional struggle in background.
Mm-hmm.
That they've somehow were forced to create their own self-identity.
Right.
In
the middle of the chaos at home or in the middle of the challenge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because you're on your own.
Right.
So you don't even have, maybe I didn't have any other relative really step in, so that they would really sometimes tap into their identity, my identity. No real relative bonded with me.
Hmm.
So I was basically on my own with my own self-identity.
Hmm.
And
that must have been lonely, huh?
Well, yes, it was lonely. But at the same time, it forced me to value friends. Friendships
mm-hmm.
in a very human way, in a very much of a family way, and becoming more and more intuned, I'd say, to the principles, of
I think we have to have a certain degree of isolation in order to continue becoming more adept at attunement, if you will, with the greater vibrational thing. That's probably a little bit to do with yours, but you really appreciated your friendships, didn't you?
Yes. So, and that carried through the years. And again, I would say to you and to your listeners, sometimes friends come in and sometimes they go out, you know. Sometimes a friend will have more layers, you know, to unravel, more areas, you know, whether it's a loving friend or maybe somebody in finances or political, whatever it is, there's many pieces of the pie to mm-hmm. make a whole, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But different friends at different times. And some friends stay longer, I feel, because they have more layers to share.
And I've had long-term friends, have you? And I've moved a lot, so that's ironic, isn't it?
Well, that's very nice, but it's I don't think it matters sometimes when you move, because if you're connected to somebody, that spirit is still going to be with you.
Right.
No matter where you move. You know, you can have somebody living right next door to you and not be friends.
Right. That's true.
But, you know? But if they move, if you're still connected in that spirit plane, because I think that's the strongest connection, that loving spirit plane, I think you'll still... There's still that so-called spiritual chemistry.
That's true, eh? Now, have you continued with your art? And are you into understanding color as a vibration and what all that means? It's not a trick question. I'm just interested.
Yeah. Well, I haven't painted in a while. I'm sure I'll get back to it. I used to paint Native Americans portraits.
Oh. Hmm.
But now I'm drawn more to abstraction. Hmm. Or flowers, mm-hmm. You know, or cubism.
Oh, cubism. You know, now that's interesting.
Like Picasso-ish, you know?
Sure, yeah.
So sometimes, which are all these things can be very interesting, because why do we shift from one subject matter to another? Mm-hmm. Just like why we shift from one friend to another, or why do we shift from one type of movie we want to see? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's something internal that we really can't pinpoint. The soul is simply, hopefully, as much evolving or shifting, mm-hmm. you know, just to different areas of our lives.
I guess what's it? Oh, sorry, I dropped something. We'll have to edit that out. I guess. When you say that, I guess that when we, as we get older, mm-hmm. I'm going to leave enough space here so they can edit that part out. Okay. As we get older, it's really interesting to see the facets of our being that have been shining up because of certain relationships, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. And I'm thinking about that today. Some people that are in our lives, you really feel much more of a connection with mm-hmm. than others. You know, you can kind of pinpoint it, you know? But I find that part kind of interesting.
But what do you think about karma?
Well, there's so many different concepts of karma. Some people use it a lot. I think it's is it to you unfinished business, Veronica?
Yeah, I think it's common. I just think when you said that you're drawn more to some people than others, I feel personally through the years having doffed many different styles of thinking that I've learned and either accept or don't accept. But I feel like the thing about karma is just someone that you're really, really kind of cellularly attached to. And so we can say it's because you've got unfinished business, or we can say maybe we're sold, connected, or we're soulmates, which I think is a very mm-hmm. tricky thing to be. But I think it's connected more in deep kind of magnetic ways than some people are. I think they're part of our soul journey in a very big way, right?
Yeah. Some people... instantly you can feel a deeper connection without doing much.
Well, some of them I go, I think I better get away from this person because it feels almost dangerous. Like, you know what I mean? Like I won't be able to get out. Or have you ever thought of that? Have you ever felt that?
Well, I can pick up negative energies around somebody. I don't know if that's exactly what you're saying, but not the karma aspect, but certainly the negativity stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, or the spirit sometimes around somebody. You can feel that they have negative spirits around them, mm-hmm. you know, around their electromagnetic field or their aura.
And what do you do about that? Do you clear energies?
Yes. I mean, I think I'll put certain incense on, sage, mm-hmm. you know, or cedar or lavender. I got this mini diffuser, which is really cool. You just, you know, you put an essential oil in there. I don't think, I'm not sure we can ever become totally, totally clean, so mm-hmm. to speak.
Yeah, too much empathy, huh?
You know, in other words, does say, I just don't know if that's possible to, in other words, to unravel everything, you know, in us, whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Right.
But I think maybe we can give it less attention.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do. I just sort of am postulating inside of myself that maybe when we deal with things, we don't have those attachments at all. You know, but that to me is enlightenment or something of that ilk, right?
Right.
Anyway, I also was interested in going through your book. I'm going, I really mm-hmm. love the word courage. Talk about mm-hmm. courage.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, Veronica. Courage is, which chapter? Awakening is courage. Let's see.
Yeah, first awakening. Second, I'm just flipping through the book, but I was thinking more of, well, we can look for it, but I was thinking of the meaning of the word courage is a wonderful.
It's, well, it's a beautiful word, and because I think what it does, my own reflection, and then I could certainly read some of the quotes in here.
I like your, I love your quotes, incidentally.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm looking at one now by Tagore, and he says, you can't cross the sea merely by standing and staring at the water. So I think courage is something that it's a sense of fearlessness. You know, it's a sense of fearlessness that we're not pinpointing or we're not embracing the darkness of something. Mm-hmm. We're just totally going forward like an arrow, you know, like that Sagittarian with the bow in the air, you know, totally forward and forward without something gnawing at our spirit, you know, it's with vitality, a purpose. And I was saying a fearlessness. It's, I think the more we have it, the more we keep going forward.
Mm.
And the more we can attain exactly who we are. Because I think when we have fears, and everybody's been at some fears, but when we have intense fears and blockages, then that word courage doesn't really connect because we're not going to go forward. Courage is something that is a strong, I would say almost like a fire element, you know, with a softness to it at the same time. That wants to keep going forward no matter what, you know, not necessarily an ego that way, but more that you're convicted that you want to go forward and attain something.
You know, what's interesting about that, of course, I love the link with French. So courage in French is heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what I find really interesting in myself and other explorers of possibility, that it, for me, when I'm really using courage, I'm going, yeah, you could fail. Yes, you could, but we're just going to do it anyway. And I kind of access spirit at that point to give me the courage, the faith, the strength for that. It's a really big word for me.
That's beautiful what you said, too. And relating to that, what you said, heart, the last sentence I have in that chapter, Courage, fifth chapter, is a courageous friend speaks from the heart without hesitation.
I like that a lot.
You know?
But, you know, that that's hard for us sometimes. People often dart around and hide behind their what they really want
yes.
to say, right?
Yes. And I think, and we all can do that easily, but the more we do it less. Again, I think one of our journeys for everyone is to become exactly who we are. Mm-hmm. You know, the I am, you know,
right.
You know, and that's not always so easy because we've been, there's too many other things that come along the way that can take away from it. But the more we have the courage for that, I think, you know, without fear of intimidation from anybody or rejection or even using that word, because I don't think that word exists to begin with.
Which, it's rejection?
No, I don't believe in that word.
Oh.
No.
I love that. You're so interesting. You know, I don't believe in that word. I like that.
Because a lot of people, if you notice in relationships or an artist that takes their music, you know, to a music company and quote, they feel rejected because they didn't accept it. Maybe on a higher level, we can simply say it's not so much rejection, but there's another door that's better for us.
But Carol, because sometimes it's hard to know that in the moment, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. There's no question. But maybe it's just better not to use the word, you know, look at it, you know, erase the word somehow. Because what it can also do is prevent us to go forward.
Yeah, because words are like bullets of vibration, aren't they?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea. Rejection is a word we should delete from our vocabulary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
some words, you know.
What is faith to you?
Well, faith is a very powerful word to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely powerful. I think it's a tool to use all the time, because, and relating to what we were just saying, rejection. Anytime we might feel something in a negative way, some experience in life that we weren't exactly too thrilled with having.
Right. You know? We've had a few of those, right?
Right. You know, if we can rise above it in a personal way and realize to me that there's a, this is how I look at it, that there certainly is a creative, a divine force that orchestrated the design of our lives, then I tap into that so that that experience, the personal experience, isn't as intense or as much of a hardship, you know?
Do you do that with a meditation?
I've done it with a major episode in my life, you know. I haven't done it with meditation. I should do more meditation. But I just think that it's, I don't know, it's a very powerful word. Here's the Martin Luther King Jr. Faith is taking the first step even when you cannot see the whole staircase.
Yeah, I think that's really a big, big, it's a big step. How's that? Because even when you're talking, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking, even when we say fear of rejection or courage and all of that, it takes faith to say to the higher, okay, I realize this is for our greater good. It takes a lot of faith to really go into that space in the state of anxiety or trauma, doesn't it?
Yes, all for our own good, or and with that, just for the way that it is planned. Because if we all study some major events of our lives, I think they were just going to happen. It's a lot of major events in our lives. We didn't necessarily plan.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
You know, we really didn't. You might meet somebody from, I don't know, somewhere, then you had no, and then they, I don't know, they tell you of a good context for writing a book, we'll say. You know, a major event, I don't think, my thing is basically that our callings, our missions are there for us, and the faith of that, that we will, I think, maybe a good affirmation on that. I have faith that I will attain, you know, my highest good, my highest mission, my highest calling. The Creator is with me. You know, I know I will do it. You know, some is one of my affirmations.
Do you do affirmations a lot?
Sometimes, but I'm looking at the back of the book, Veronica, where the healing affirmations are, and under Power of Faith, under Healing Affirmations, one of them says, "Speak to me, Creator, I will listen to thee. I will listen to the signs that you graciously send to me. And speak to me, Creator, I will listen to thee. I will follow your way. I know that your heart is with me." So it's just tapping into the higher source, you know, with faith.
I think that's about, just a sec, I'm taking a look through to try and find your affirmations here. But I think it's about, you probably teach a lot of your clients, and you certainly teach in this book, about making that higher connection with the greater picture for us, don't you?
Yeah, that, Veronica is on page 102.
Okay.
Yes, because, I think the more we I don't know if that's the word recited, but for now I'll say recited, the more we're affirming to ourselves, you know, that this is what we want, and we're also within those words affirming that there is a spiritual partnership. You know, we're acknowledging the spiritual partnership, and there is, and a lot of times we don't think, because we get into maybe one-on-one partnerships, you know, but there's a spiritual partnership, how we got here, where we leave, how we leave.
But that's back to synchronicities too, telling you how you fit into the greater, right?
Yes. Yes.
I love this. And go ahead. Mm-hmm. Here's a non sequitur. There's a quote from Lao Tzu, which I loved, and it's not totally relevant to what you're saying, but I think it is. It's on page 50. Do you remember that? And it says, "Being deeply loved by someone gives you strength, while loving someone deeply gives you courage."
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That is beautiful, and I think that's pointed as far as what we're speaking about.
Very beautiful. Because loving someone, sometimes we don't want to love someone. You know, we're fearful of that love, you know?
Yeah, what would happen if...
Right, exactly. What will happen if this person reject me? What is the fear content of it? So loving someone, that's a beautiful quote.
So what would you say if someone is... It is a very beautiful quote, actually, especially it's linked to courage and so on. But what would you say to a client who was hedging about falling in love? What would you say to her or him?
Well, I would say, I probably started off by saying, what do you have to lose? A lot of people will say, you know, oh, you're going to get hurt.
Right.
Well, that's part of life. We're always going to get hurt. So it's a matter of, do you want to take a risk? I don't think I'd put it that way. But I would put it more that, you know, if you feel connected to this person, then follow your heart, and without fear of a rejection, without fear of fear, simply follow your heart as much as possible. Take it as a beautiful experience. Don't try not to feel locked into it, but be with the experience of it as much as possible. Because maybe if you followed how you met, maybe there was a synchronistic pattern to it.
Right.
You know? And maybe you were led to meet this person. And I think in relationships, the more we feel the heart, without getting boxed into something, you know, once we accept a lot, there's no such thing anyway, because then you get something and then you have to expect more, you know. But just simply to have the seed with the courage and try to just, I would say, nurture the heart as much as possible and use some, I would use some affirmations for that too.
Well, and there's another aspect of it. I agree with you entirely, actually. Another aspect of it is, I wonder how many people, especially in this society, miss the opportunity to really experience love because it might not last, or because it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the experience is transcendent.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might not last. And then, okay, so then the expectation of it to last, and then what does that mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a cycle. Well, what you're talking about here is faith, too, which is the sixth awakening. And I sort of smile about things like love, and I go, well, we have to have faith that it's really wonderful for me to love, even if this doesn't turn out to be a long-term connection. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, that's beautiful. And it heals.
It does heal, doesn't it?
No, it's a healing element. And I love Cahil Gibran's quote. I think love has no other desire than to be itself. In other words, there's no manipulation. It's an entity on its own, by itself, you know?
I love that.
That it's abundant, that it heals. It's the essence of the creator, you know? It comforts, very comforting to feel that you are loved by somebody or many people. And that's why, relating to that, Veronica, there's a chapter on compassion, because that to me is a heart, even another aspect of love, you know, where it extends. It's not some one-on-one, but it's to the struggles of mankind. It's to mankind.
Right.
You know, it's to the world. It's understanding people's struggles, you know?
Yeah, it sort of requires knowing that everyone's struggling. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's faith in that too.
Acknowledging the meaning of compassion. What is compassion? It's a monumental, when you think of it, it's a monumental vibration. It's a high vibration. Maybe it's the color yellow, blue, or it's green. You know, it's just of such a high vibration, because that person is so in tune with that struggle of somebody else, you know. There's a quote here, compassion brings us to a stop. Hmm. And for a moment, we rise above ourselves.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, yes. All of these quotes are making me go, oh, and taking myself into various situations. Because sometimes doing affirmations, I can get the mind words, but sometimes the feeling that we're talking about, it takes me a while to open up my receptors. Is that the right way to put it? Probably.
Sure, why not?
So you've been, how long has it taken you to dig these out and to not dig them out, but obviously they're a result of many years of exploration, right?
Well, I really don't know how it all came about, and I think that what we were saying before with our mission or calling, or that we have, everybody has many callings, you know, just somehow evolved. One of the steps, of course, was the movie I saw, and one client who was a brilliant neurologist, and she pinpointed a lot. I was reading for her every day for over a year.
Oh, wow.
And she used a lot of, you know, prayers and affirmations with her clients. And that also triggered in me certain more thoughts. And the other interesting thing with her is that she said she never knew what friendship was.
Oh, wow.
Because isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Because when she went to medical school, they only read books.
Hmm.
So there was no, none of the human connection.
Was she a nice person?
That's it. Yes. I met her actually in New York. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as I know,
Yeah.
But she really did believe in prayers and still does, and affirmations.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
With her clients, with her patients. So it took the book maybe 5 years, over 5 years, which is, you know, most of publishing or writing is editing. You know, the the silent thought process.
Okay.
Listening, chapter two, listening to our own inner voice as well. Listening to others and listening to what our inner voice is also saying about the writing process or the words that we would like to use in one's book, you know?
Did you run a writing class at all?
No. This is the first time I've ever even attempted to write.
But it's not going to be the last, is it?
I don't think so. The next one is going to be on health.
Oh, good.
And definitely will be on health.
What aspect and the link to your soul's journey or your lifestyle or?
I would like to compile different people's stories on certain concepts. So now I'll just keep to myself. But you know, certain kinds. I'd like different stories of people.
Oh, I like that idea. Well, you must have a lot of stories. Let's go back to the fourth awakening, which is inner security and inner peace. I think that's a hard thing to stabilize.
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The first page, and then I'll talk about it, is work like you don't need money.
Yeah.
Live like you've never been hurt. Sing as if no one can hear you. And dance like no one's watching.
I love that.
So it's tough, you know, the inner security, inner peace, and certainly a good friend, a secure friend, can certainly be very comforting at the times when we feel insecurity or anxiety from something. Or someone, you know, that they can also help us with their gentleness and their encouragement, and just the way they speak to us, you know.
I think when people, long-term friends, when they're together with us, it's like there's a knowing about one another that goes way back, and that makes me feel better about myself. It's more familiar with myself, more in touch with myself in an odd way.
Mm-hmm. Well, because maybe you feel more comfortable with yourself, so maybe that enhances more security or with that person, with that friend, because you know that you can trust them more.
Yeah, and I think when we reflect back to one another, we take it inside and we get strength from that as well, right?
Yes. As well as two of the chapters, the first and the second, patience and listening. Because maybe sometimes when you do know somebody for a while, you become more patient with each other because you've known each other's backgrounds. You know, and you listen more. You can certainly listen to the present moment.
Right.
Again, because you know each, you know. Each
and
other
because
background.
Some of the discovery has already been done. Oh, you know I always do this, and I know you always do that kind of thing. And it's not
right.
Like, oh, no. It's more like, oh, yeah, okay. That's who you
right,
are.
Right, 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 right.
And I think so there's a lot about love in that.
Yes, it's spiritual love, beautiful.
Yeah.
You've accepted each other, you know, for who they are, and are compassionate. Another awakening, a compassionate with that person.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
No criticism, right? Because the more you know somebody, or the more the background that you know, their struggles, criticism wouldn't really fit in.
Well, that's true. Yeah, although here's the other thing I'm thinking. I have some very long-term friends, and we've all had fights or disagreements, pushed away and come back. And I think sometimes that is one of the best things that ever happens, because then you know they're not just going to walk away as soon as something, you know, something challenges you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
And that helps with my inner security anyway. You know, not that I argue much with my friends, but through the years, there's usually been at least one or two altercation with some of the major ones, and it's not affected our relationship, except by way of knowing each other, you know. As you said it earlier, I mean, I believe this, which is we're all meant to be something from within, and we're all different from one another, but that something, when we shy away from it, doesn't come forward. So the friends that are around you, and you've already said this in other ways, the friends that stay with you through the years already know all that, right?
And you've also built with that a respect for one another, you know? And there's a quote that's about exactly how it goes, but it goes, isn't friendship divine?
Oh, you know? It is actually, isn't it?
Right, you know? Yeah.
Can you be friends with your siblings?
I think you can be friends with your siblings, but I look at it as a sibling, the blood tie. Not always you're going to be friends with, you know, that person.
Right.
Look at it more person to person. Just like a cousin or an aunt or an uncle, you know, the blood ties aren't always necessarily in our heart, you know, the heart connection. They are there, but it doesn't mean that you're going to have that heart connection. So, yes, to answer, you can be, of course, friends with siblings, just as you're friends with a boyfriend or in a relationship, you know. But I think that's very important. But I think you mentioned more because of the blood ties.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course, definitely.
Well, sometimes it's harder for people. Sometimes it's not. I guess it's just sort of an interesting thing to cogitate, isn't it?
Right. I know what you're saying with that.
Yeah.
Yes, because maybe there are six or seven siblings in a family, and it turns out maybe one or two want more attention. And that can create more, you know, arguments or frustration, and that stuff can pop up easily.
Oh, yes. And that's why I was musing as we went through this. What about siblings? Because some people have had, me included, difficult times sharing space with the siblings. And it always seems to be something that started when you're little that makes it contentious as you get older, and you don't always get your finger on it. You don't always know what it is, you know? Does that make sense?
Sure, definitely. Yes, definitely. You know, and I guess that has to do with the dynamics of who, you know, the mother or the father. You know, that's a complicated thing because you have all these dynamics in a home.
Right.
And you can't escape the home when you're 12 years old. You know, you can like somebody, not like somebody. And then you're open to whatever enters into that, you know, into that heart area, the solar plexus.
Did you and your brother, having lost your parents, did you establish a better rapport?
I think we established more of a closeness.
Okay.
Yes, I would say yes. Yes, yes.
That's nice.
Yeah, I would say yes. Yes. Yes, definitely. Yes.
Well, let's talk about generosity. That's another big word.
Yes, it is. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
All of these words are really like, wow, bullets, you know.
Oh, that's not. I'm glad you like it.
I do, actually.
Yeah, well, the gift of generosity, you know. Like Confucius on the first page. Give a bowl of rice to a man, and you will feed him for a day. Teach him how to grow his own rice, and you will save his life.
Yeah, that's really good.
Very good. The gift of generosity is very powerful because, of course, it's not coming from how much money you give somebody when it's a holiday. It's coming from how much somebody is giving themselves to you,
right?
You know, and I mentioned children on page 69.
Okay,
that children can teach us many lessons about the gift of generosity, because they haven't yet learned role playing, you know, and sometimes they reach out to their friend with trust, little discrimination, and a pure heart, you know. And I write that children tend to bond easier than adults. They don't, which is, I find interesting, this next one is children don't necessarily hold on to grudges as in the adult world.
Well, that's
Right, you know, they bounce back quicker and they give more freely. So, and then I put down, I write, the children are wise little people. Yeah, the gift of generosity is so powerful. How, and I'm sure we've all experienced some people around us that are more self-oriented than other and other-oriented. And people, of course, that are more other-oriented tend to be more generous with themselves to others, you know?
I like that. They tend to be more generous of themselves. Is that it? Like, give of themselves?
Yeah.
I was just thinking that there are times when, for example, I pass homeless people and I might one day might be in a hurry and I'm annoyed about something and I just stuff a dollar over there and then I go, that wasn't generosity. That was duty, or that was get it out of my sight or something. I'm not always like that. I'm just saying that we have those ways of solving problems that aren't exactly generous, right?
Yes. I know what you're saying. Yes. No, generous is like a straight arrow, you know, and of course it involves, I say, I'm sure one of the ingredients is also empathy, because maybe the more we empathize with another human being, we would be more generous. I mean, if we can't, we don't empathize with another human being, that would mean maybe some people are more into themselves. So they don't necessarily, they won't explore the concept of gift of generosity.
Right.
You know, they have their own security blankets, their home, their husband, their wife.
Their status, their status.
Or their status, you know, they're not thinking of exploring friends.
Right. Now that's really, and actually generosity on the higher level includes love, includes compassion. Includes kind of listening, right?
Yes.
Even listening can be an art of generosity.
Yes, that's beautiful what you said. Yes, it is. It's also very humble. You know, well, I think the more somebody does listen, maybe I'm just thinking out loud here, maybe they have more humility, you know, because they're not trying to dominate anything with any sense of their right self-righteousness. You know, they're speaking, speaking freely, acknowledging that that person is another human being, which goes back to the awakening of friendship, the human connection, the universal tapestry, I call it, of mankind.
I like that a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, the more humble we are, the more we might embrace others to be with us. Why not in Christmas? Why not? Why does it have to be always the blood ties that are with us?
I know. Well, you know why. It's all duty and tradition and all those things, right?
Right, right.
Wow, that's a really interesting subject because you're getting me going. I'm going, wow. Because if a person did, well, let's do the next awakening, which is gratitude. But if we did all these things, my goodness, I would be so much more evolved than I am today, right?
Well, you know, even if we pick up one or two or three or, you know, and just expand on it with ourselves, you know, I think it's like we just keep on blossoming more. And again, like that rose that opens up more and more, you know, the petal. It's a blossoming of the soul, of the human spirit. And really, I'm looking at these human principles of basically what we were created with. You know, just basically what we were created with.
Well, that's true. We're almost coming to a close, so I want you to tell us, or I'm asking nicely, if you'll, what do you, this is a wonderful book, and you're going to start a radio show soon, right?
Yes, I am.
Do you do little classes on these? This book would be a great reference for classes, wouldn't it?
Well, and thanks, Ron. I am. I will be starting that. I have one assigned to me in New York City, workshop and book signing. And then I'll look forward to that. Because to the way we have been conversing back and forth, I could see that in a class. You know, it's opening up the eyes.
Yeah.
You know,
and the heart. And the heart.
And the heart to these beautiful principles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more we open up to these principles, maybe there would be more of a stress on peace in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the more compassion we have for another human being, we might think twice what we're doing. We might not, you know, there's a lot of unfortunate killings right all over.
Oh, please. It's ridiculous.
You know, maybe we would actually feel more about it rather than listening to the numbers that we listen to. Or that we hear on the TV, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you entirely. And, yeah, so I'll be looking forward to hearing about what it is you're going to do. And also, you're starting your radio show on Blog Talk Radio in February, am I right?
Sometime in February. It's Health is Wealth.
Health is Wealth, okay.
I know that used to be a Chinese expression, when you're healthy, you're wealthy. So it's called Health is Wealth, and I'll have special healers to enhance body, mind, and spirit. And it could be in all areas of life. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be an alternative practitioner. It could be any area of life that's going to enhance, you know, of total being.
I love
body,
that.
Mm-hmm. Mind. And spirit. So that'll be sometime in February.
Do you have a website so people at home can keep track?
Yes. The website is www.theawakeningoffriendship.com.
Theawakeningoffriendship.com. I love that title.
Yes. And people can email me if they have an interest to know also when the show will begin on Blog Talk, and they could certainly email me at Carol Olivia, one word, Carol Olivia, Olivia 7, Carol Olivia 7, @gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Wonderful. Well, I will try to remember, so maybe you'll remind me to put it up on my site as well. And
thanks.
I'd love to have you back again. It's been wonderful getting to know you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ron. I'd be happy to come back. Thank you.
Good. And that was my guest, Carol Olivia Adams, with The Awakening of Friendship. You're listening to Paradigm Shifters with me, Veronica Entwistle. And Paradigm Shifters comes up as a podcast on my site, veronicaentwistle.com, on iTunes and Stitcher, and also Speak Up Talk Radio nowadays. So thank you so much for listening, and we would love your feedback. Thanks so much. Hi, just a reminder, The Awakening of Friendship by Carol Olivia Adams is easily bought on Amazon.com. Check it out.